Ladies and gentlemen, this is your captain speaking. Please make sure your seatbelt is securely fastened, your tray table is in an upright and locked position, and that you are ready to get weird and think different. Please prepare for takeoff.
Today is Thursday. It is March 17th. We are back. Another episode of Destination Different. I turned 30 since we last talked. For some people, that might be scary. For some people, 30 is the end of their life. It is the number that they fear the most in the entire world. Not me. Not me. I'm not scared of it. It doesn't scare me. It's not the boogeyman. It's just 30. It's just a number. Am I just saying this because maybe it is a little scary? Maybe. But to be honest, it really doesn't scare me. I truly believe that my 30s are going to be my best decade yet. My body still works. My mind still works. I'm still hungry enough to build something, but seasoned and experienced enough to know what is right and what is wrong. I'm comfortable in my who I am and my lifestyle and all that. I don't know. I think there's nothing to be scared about in your 30s. I think 30 is just going to be an unbelievable year, an unbelievable decade. And so if I just keep saying I'm not scared of it a million times over and over, maybe I won't be scared of it. But enough about me, enough about what's going on in my world. I want to introduce you to not one, but two of my favorite guests of one of my favorite businesses that we've ever had on the Destination Different podcast. So my guests on this week's show are Jilly Rosnick and Morgan Biles, and they are the co-founders of Cured. What is Cured? As the name suggests, it is cured meats, cheeses, olives, bread, crackers. It is basically a made-to-order charcuterie business. And so this whole thing started when Jilly was packing up meats, packing up cheeses, and shipping them around Cape Cod in her minivan. I don't think it was actually a minivan, but the story sounds better that way. And from there said, you know what, this is great. There's something here. People are interested in this. There's an audience for these made-to-order charcuterie boxes. But it wasn't sustainable. She couldn't just be going to Stop and Shop every day and driving 100 miles this way, 100 miles that way on Cape Cod to deliver these things. So she set out to set up a retail store, and she found a property in Boston that was perfect for her first location. She hired on a bunch of interns. One of those interns ended up becoming her co-founder, Morgan, and ever since then, the two of them have been off to the races. They're opening up other locations in Boston. They're looking to expand to other cities around the U.S. This thing is just getting started. And so I'm so excited about what they're doing, about what they're building. Their story is phenomenal. And who doesn't love a box, a cone, a plate of meats and cheeses? There's something here. There's something to what they're doing. And I'm excited to introduce you to the Cured crew. So without further ado, let's get it rolling with Jilly Rosnick and Morgan Biles on this week's episode of Destination Different. Let's go.
What is the largest meat and cheese platter you've ever made?
It's probably that grazing table we did right before Christmas, right?
Yes, that was for like it was a grazing table for 100 people, right, Morgan? And
I think something like that, yeah. And it was in the middle of like the crazy like Christmas catering season, so we were already like running around like crazy. And I think we did like 5 other catering orders that day and then went to this office to like build a 100-person like catering spread.
What does that process even look like of building a 100 per, like, are you just like, okay, here's the table, I just got to fill it? Is that sort of the goal?
Yeah. So yeah. The process starts with Morgan and I like schlepping down the sidewalk holding about like 18 pounds of prosciutto. No, but basically, yeah, I mean, that's literally how it starts. And then we get inside to the office or like whatever house we're building. Typically, like, they have a table for us to build on, which is always like an added bonus. But yeah, it's basically just we roll out our paper there and we start just putting on the manchego, the Genoa salami, and kind of lining it in like an aesthetically appealing way.
I was wondering what the biggest size is, because you guys have gone down, you know, this company started, from what I can understand, as Jillie, you were doing like cones or bouquets or something like that. So tell me a little bit about the start and how you've now, you know, obviously scaled it up to these massive meat tables.
Yeah. So I got the idea for Cured when I studied in Madrid during my junior year at school. And everybody in Europe eats like a ridiculous amount of charcuterie. So I got to learn like a lot about charcuterie just generally in Europe. But like something I really, really fell in love with was kind of this like social, like oriented, relationship oriented culture that it could promote. Cause you know, I would walk home from school every day. Like people were always on the sidewalk with the charcuterie board and like a pitcher of beer kind of thing. And so, yeah, fell in love with that way of life. And then came back for my senior year at BC, just like started creating charcuterie boards as this total like side hustle hobby thing. It like literally became a joke. I had this Instagram called like Jillie's Instaham account at one point. Then we were sent home because of COVID. And yeah, everybody went back to live with their parents. Like nothing was really going on. And I saw that BC had posted this link to do the summer accelerator program through the Shea Center. And I always kind of knew I wanted to do charcuterie in a creative way, and this edible arrangements for charcuterie thing stuck. And so that's literally what I pitched it as. And that's what I launched it as for the summer of 2020. I was, you know, in my parents' house, like slinging meat bouquets. Like it totally was not luxurious at all. And I would deliver them out of my like 2013 Honda Civic, like across Cape Cod. But yeah, that summer taught me that the product itself was definitely taking upward in trend, like for whatever reason, people, you know, were still ordering these things. But it was totally like inaccessible. I had to go to like Stop and Shop, get everything myself, like build it. It was just super expensive and time consuming. And then at the same time, I was like, why is there no national name brand for charcuterie? Like, it's just this really hot trending category. And that's, so that's where we started exploring brick and mortar. And now we're here. So.
Got it. So those early days were literally just you going to the supermarket. You're like, okay, I'm going to take a pound of this, a pound of that. And then you're piecing it up together. And were people at that point placing orders online? Did you even have a website set up at that point? Was it even called Cured yet? Like, where did that origin start?
Yeah, so it was called Cured, and I wish I had like a more interesting story to kind of describe why I chose that name, but there really is no interesting story there. It was just something that was kind of like, I don't know, it stuck. And then yeah, I would literally go to Stop and Shop. I'd go to like the charcuterie section. I would buy like one of those like dry cured sopressata sticks and like these like little truffle salami things and like a block of cheddar or whatever. Take it home, like cut everything up, skew it onto like wooden skewers, cut like styrofoam, like shove that in a bucket, puncture the skewers into the styrofoam, like just totally not health safe at all. And then yeah, I would just go deliver them, and people were placing online, and I have no idea how they found out about Cured, probably because like my mom posted in like the Falmouth Cape Cod like moms group. But yeah, we had like a Weebly site, and people, I would get like two orders a day.
And so clearly there was like a little bit of, you know, you have a little bit of traction and you're seeing that this is kind of sticking. And was there a point where you're like, this, you know, you said, it seems like it wasn't sustainable for you to be just driving all over Cape Cod doing this. So how quickly did you look and say, all right, I want to buy a storefront to go and do this because I just can't be driving around anymore?
Yeah. I'd say like The exploration of brick and mortar didn't come till the end of the program. So that was August, like early September of 2020. So that was like 3 months in. And it really just boils down to the fact where, yeah, it was kind of like all these national name brands that we buy into every day, like what do they all have in common? They have like an on-premise place for consumption in addition to this like online presence. And I was like, if we want to be the national name for charcuterie, like that's like the optimal route for us to go is really this brick and mortar route.
Got it. And you make that decision. Hey, I think that I need to pick up a storefront. There's a great quote from you, and I want to play a game later that piggybacks off of this a little bit, but you basically are like, vacant places in Boston near me, like that I can buy a storefront. So how quickly did that happen? Like that you were, you know, bringing this to a storefront, and were you still taking online orders during that time, or you're like, put things on pause until you got into a physical location?
Yeah. So this was at the peak of the first wave of COVID. So the vacancies were just like off the chart. And I remember I typed into like LoopNet, like 600 square foot, like Boston, like food zoned retail stores. And like one space came up that I saw on LoopNet, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is on Charles Street. Like that is incredible. Like that would be awesome for like the product we're offering. The customer demo is like right up the alley there. And so I just like reached out to the number that the ad was posted on, which led me to the broker who did the deal for us, who's like a fantastic broker and like still is like an advisor for Cure today. So started touring in September, like had no idea what I was doing at all. Like still don't really, but like really had no idea what I was doing. So would like tour a bunch of places and then like would stop the process and just kind of like analyze everything going on and like ask for advice from like mentors in the SSC program that I did. So that process went on from, I'd say like September to end of like December, like right before Christmas. And then that's when we decided to put like an LOI in on the space around Christmas. And then after the holiday is when we really decided like, hey, we've looked at all these spaces, like this one is still the best, like on Charles Street. And we got a lease drafted up from, you know, with that landlord. And then we were back and forth with lease negotiations. And so it really wasn't until like end of Jan, Feb of 2021 that we had a lease fully executed, signed. And then we started onboarding a team of like architects, general contractors, like all that stuff. And we went through that process till like end of May, and then we opened early June. So
that's crazy. Did you have a team? Was it just you at that point? Morgan, were you involved? I think you were still in school at that point. So like, did you have anybody else helping you? So obviously you're hiring, you know, broker, architect, things like that. But was there anybody like purely on the Cure team at that point?
So Morgan did not, she was not on yet. So she came in June, which she could tell you about that. But at that point it was just me. And we received like a seed stage of funding from like a well-capitalized BC venture fund. And so there was a couple between like the mentors in the SSC program and like a couple of advisors and mentors in that other fund, like that's pretty much who I was talking to. But there was no one in the network of mentors who had launched like a store before. So there was a ton of just like endless nights just researching like how to open a store in Boston.
This was going to be my game that I wanted to play with you. And I like asking new business owners yet. So you both have to answer this. Dumbest Google search that you've made in the process of starting a business.
Oh my gosh, that is such a good question.
I feel like there's a lot of things we have to Google, like, is this legal or like, is this health safe? I feel like, I don't know. Or I feel like we're always Googling weird things about meat too.
Yeah. Or we run like classes, like build your own box classes. And like, we, part of the class is like kind of an educational component where we'll talk about the product and like where it comes from. So like the amount of times that Genoa salami or like, I don't know, like chorizo sausage has like been in my Search bar is like so weird.
I always think, go ahead, Morgan.
Oh, I was just going to say, we have like the Wikipedia pages for like these meets, like bookmarked or something. So when we have to pretend we're like well-educated about these things and pull up the fun facts, we can.
It is like, there's not a single business owner, entrepreneur that I've met yet that's like, I'm like, well, how did you figure out how to start an LLC? How did you figure out how to find an apartment? It's always like, I don't know, I just Googled 10,000 things until I figured out how to do it.
Yeah, I always say all the time, like, if I weren't doing Cured, like, I would create a consultancy of, like, how to open up a store, like a food store specifically, because there's just no... there's no resources, and you just like spend countless hours just like reading things and getting advice from one person, and then the next person will tell you that the advice is wrong. And like, I think, yeah, you'd make so much business having like a food consultancy of how to open up a food store.
But somehow you've managed to figure it out. So you get the store, you get the lease, and then you're now building out the store. So Jillie, tell me a little bit about that process of like, did you have a grand vision for what you wanted this space to look like? Did you know, obviously you got to work within the confines of your space, but what did that look like as you started to really like build this brand in person? It wasn't just you and your car going to Stop and Shop anymore. It was like, this is going to be a real tangible thing.
Yeah. So that's where the architecture firm really came in handy, because it's like with the first store, you don't know who you are at all, like as a brand, really. Like I kind of had a vague sense of like the vision I wanted and like who we kind of wanted to be, but like to translate that tangibly to like store ambiance and like setting, that's like a whole different ball game. So yeah, the architecture firm, it was a 6-week design process of just, you know, it started by me typing out a design narrative of kind of like this vague vision I'm talking about. And then basically you sit down and you start in phase one of like kind of like analyzing that vision. And then the remaining phases of the process are like the architecture firm kind of grabs your certain visions and like just does very general renderings of the space. And so it very much is like, yeah, you know, you'll sit down for a meeting, they'll show you like space A, space B. It's like you pick like, I like space B better. And then they continue down that path. So like kudos to them, like without them, like that was just very much a necessary, like to go through that process. And then like, so they introed me to an equipment supplier who introed me to a GC. So it's like everyone in the industry just like has connections. So it's very much like dating, where, you know, I was going through the process of like, once I was done with the architects, like which equipment supplier do we want to use? And I was like having initial conversations with them. And then the GCs, I like probably talked to like 5 to 8 GCs. And it's like, okay, which one do you want to work with? Like,
and GC, just for people, is general contractor, correct?
Yes. General contractor. So it was a dating process, and then, yeah, I, you know, I would lean on these people to kind of give me insight and advice, and really like spearhead the whole process, because I don't know. And they're like professionals in the industry. So.
And did the vision, or did the final product of the finished store, you go through all of this work, all of the dating process of finding the right vendors, did it match what was roughly in your head?
Yeah, it did. Like, so from the get-go, I always envisioned kind of like a street, like an art, like street art, industrial vibe. And they, you know, the final design very much lended itself to that vision. I would say, I think like in terms of the equipment, we would probably do the equipment layout differently. We didn't necessarily expect to be like pumping charcuterie boxes out as much as we are per day. So we don't have enough room back there to really like move and like operate. We're kind of all like on top of one another. So I think I would probably do it differently with like separating the front of house walk-ins and like online orders, like keep that in the back how it is now. And then I'd probably have a separate area for like catering. I don't know, Morgan, would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think we just assumed we'd like stand there and have like one person every hour like come in, so we wouldn't need a lot of space, but that was mistake.
Yeah.
Were there, I don't know if you even knew this, but at the start, were you projecting out, this is what we're going to sell, this is how many meat plates we're going to sell? Like, and that was sort of like, is that what you were doing? How did you even start to get a sense of like what foot traffic was going to look like, how many you were going to sell online versus in store? Like, how did you start building out some of those things from an expectation standpoint?
Yeah. So I think the initial model was like, we had modeled in 40 sales a day. Like that was like the goal to get to. And then we launched in like the summer, and very much a seasonal business where people like it like cranks in the summer. Like that's our sweet spot. So I think we kind of surpassed our expectations for the summer months, but I will say for the cooler months and like the winter and like January, they're definitely down months for us. So the expectations are matched there, but like with the summer months, it's like totally surpassed. Like there would be days where we'd be doing like, I think the max was like 200 sales a day or something like that.
Yeah, right? It was like a little bit more than that, I think, one of those busy days.
Yeah. So, and then with regards to your question about like how we projected it, it's like, we definitely didn't even think about that until like things settled down. And I mean, like we launched, we just wanted to like open the doors to the store, get product out the door. And so then after like a full summer of like, just like every day, we literally were like aliens in the store. There'd be days where we just like, didn't even like eat or drink water. But after those 3 months, we had like enough data to be like, okay, this is how many sales we're doing online. This is how many are walk-in. This is like the peak hours that we're selling. So we really developed like that summer a really good database of certain metrics that allowed us to kind of project in that way.
And was this, again, all you two doing this? Did you, you have other people who are helping with this? Like, how did you start to, as you've now opened the store, divide and conquer, establish like who's responsible for what? What did that begin to look like as you obviously, are not just doing this out of your car anymore?
Yeah. So we brought in 9 Boston College interns who like we all had food experience where like we were like waitresses before or like cashiers, like whatever. But like none of us had worked in a restaurant or like worked a line or like worked in a kitchen. So like that was fun to like try to like after that period of the interns, we had real food service like experienced individuals come in to help. And they were like, this is not helpful. Like they just totally like revolutionized like everything that was going on. It's probably bad for me to say on the podcast, but so we had 9 interns and like it was just super, super fun because we were all just figuring it out together. And like it was literally the start of like Cured, like what Cured is like is today and like what Cured we want to be. So there are days we just like, we pretty much just like opened the door and we're like, all right, like let's see how this goes, and we figured it out together.
And what those like early days was to that point, maybe you did just open the door, but was there any marketing effort? Was there anything to try and drum up foot traffic into the store? What did that look like when you've now got just this brand new facility that nobody knows about? Nobody knows what Cured is anywhere. How did you drive people to come and stop in and grab from your store?
I think initially we just like the first day, once we realized we were like open and the like health department had come through and like given us the okay, we're like, oh, we'll just like write on the window outside that we're open and see like who comes in while we figure this out. So I think that like first afternoon we had like, I don't know, probably 5 people come in just from foot traffic on Charles Street. But it really blew up when we posted on TikTok is how it got big. We put it on, I don't know, like on a weekday, and then that next weekend it had like 500,000 views, and we just drowned that weekend with all the people coming into the store.
That's amazing. I did see those early TikTok days, and was that like a sustain, like you have that success on TikTok and you're obviously like, drawing people in through social media. was that a strategy that you're like, all right, let's keep pushing on this. Let's like, you know, really be kind of a big presence on social media in the Boston area. How did you think about going forward? You know, once you get out of that initial wave of like, holy shit, we're open. Like what did you sort of do to continue to drive people and build the brand really?
I feel like we were so busy that there was not even a strategy behind it. We didn't even have time to like pause and think about it, but it would just be if it was like a sort of slower day, like we'd pull out our phones, me and the interns, and be like, oh, what can we like do a TikTok of or find an Instagram to post? So it wasn't even like a strategy really. It was just, we're bored. What can we do on here? Yeah.
And so Morgan, maybe to back up a little bit too, like at what point during this flurry did you join, and how did that go with you coming on to sort of jump into this full time?
So I came on with the interns actually. Like I thought it was just going to be a summer thing. I had graduated or was getting ready to graduate from BC. I didn't have my plans figured out for post-grad, and one of my friends like sent me the link on like the job posting of it, and she was like, well, you make like charcuterie boards for us, like why don't you just do this? And I was like, oh, okay, like it'll be a summer thing, like I figure out what I want to do afterwards. And I think now I was like the luckiest unemployed like college graduate ever, because I just kind of like rolled into this and realized how much I really loved the like opportunity and working with Jilly, and just quickly turned into like a full-time thing rather than just a summer gig.
And did you guys know each other beforehand, or was it totally random? You signed up for a job link and became co-founders by accident.
Yeah, we did not know each other. I think a lot of people are surprised actually when I say that. But we did not know each other at all. And I remember in the end of the summer was nearing, and I was like, oh man, like everybody's going to leave, and how am I going to do this alone? Like, and I just remember Morgan and I were driving to a like Down East Cider to do like a pop-up. And I was like, so like, if you want a job, like, just like, you have a job, by the way. And she was like, oh yeah, yeah. Okay, great. And that was it. And then like, we were like partners in this. So yeah, I was very like nonchalant, Morgan.
Yeah, I feel like I was like, we had had sort of like early conversations about it. Mm-hmm. Or I don't know, we had hinted at it like, oh, you know, like you don't have to leave after the summer. And I was at an interviewed and like applied for other jobs throughout the summer. And I just kind of realized that I didn't want to sit in an office or didn't want to do kind of like grunt work. And even, I mean, the charcuterie business is different kind of grunt work, obviously, like using the meat slicer. But I realized that I really wanted to like be involved and see like direct results of what I was doing, and didn't want to just, you know, sit around in a job when I could do that later at any point. So.
And as you two sort of, you know, you come on board full time, how did you build that relationship and really like divide responsibilities? Cause Jilly, it seems like for a while, like you were doing everything. You're, you know, you're talking to architects, you're managing the brand, you're doing all of that. So like, how did you start to separate responsibilities between the two of you so that you're not all doing everything at all times?
I feel like, because Morgan, wasn't your job as like the intern or whatever, like you were like marketing, like the marketing intern?
I think so.
I think it like stemmed from that, honestly. But also like through the summer, Morgan was doing all these marketing initiatives where like she's posting on TikTok, like she was doing pop-ups with me and events, and like she was like making tangible results from the efforts she was doing in marketing that summer. So I was kind of like, you seem like you'd be good at marketing. And so yeah, now she's like the head of marketing. And then I handle like more of the administrative stuff. So like, we both team tackle everything together. Like any early stage startup, you wear like every hat or whatever, but I'm more of like hiring and like right now, like expanding. I'm talking to like the equipment suppliers again, like that kind of thing. But it's like, it's not so black and white. It's not like I'm just admin, Morgan's just marketing, and I'm fundraising or whatever. It's like we are coordinating and we're like communicating and helping each other with everything. but we have like points of contact for these certain things. So it's like point of contact, like me more administrative, Morgan more like partnerships, marketing and stuff.
Got it. So you get through that first summer, which it sounds like was just like a total whirlwind, crazy, trying to figure out how to make this whole thing work. And then pretty quickly, you're getting opportunities to, you know, open up a second space in Time Out Market. You're starting to host like classes and things like that. How did that come to be? And how have you thought about expanding this business beyond, you know, it seems like it was always more than just one location. I want this to, you know, you want to scale this thing. So how have you thought about growing it and growing it very quickly?
So I think how we've thought about it is like, because we're such a niche product and we're not an everyday consumable, like a Sweetgreen or a Chipotle, we feel like Boston, like certain cities probably can't even fit more than like a certain amount of curds. So it's like, we have Beacon Hill in Boston, we have Time Out Market. We don't even know if Boston could fit like another curd in it. It's a small town, it's like a small city, it's easy to get everywhere. So that's like one part of it. And then the second part is like, so we're expanding to New York and we feel like the concept is so easily replicable. It's like why we want to get to like the biggest market that we can while we can before someone else beats us to it. And also like, it's like a wonderland market. It's like, you know, it's a bigger market, more foot traffic. It's probably more guaranteed business for us too. So like, that's like one of the reasons we're expanding down here. And then expanding rapidly is like, what's good about our product too is like, it's never been done before. So we don't need this slow rollout of like brand build and like all this customer and product data to know that like it's going to work. It's like, we have 8 months of data. There's clearly like a demand for the product. So like speed to market is like now the play for us. So that's how I think about it. Morgan, how do you think about it?
Yeah, I mean, similar, I think, but some of the opportunities we had early on in expansion were kind of accidental. Like, even though we knew we wanted to grow, like someone from Time Out happened to come in our store and was like, we have a space that's a cold kitchen that we've struggled to fill. Like, would you guys be interested? And when we did Soa Market, I just happened to be on their website looking for something and saw they had like the application open for the winter thing. And I was like, oh, well, like, try that. We'll see what happens. And I think even though we had this vision of growing, a lot of times we just stumbled into some of these things.
That's amazing. And is there, it is something that, you know, is, it seems like you can replicate in other cities and there would be great hubs where you know, you can't guarantee it's going to work, but you have a sense that it would work in some sense. Like, are you looking to make this like a franchisee model? Are you looking to like, you know, stay and own all the stores? Like, how are you thinking about some of those factors that go into expansion?
Yeah. So I think in terms of, so we don't exactly know the route we'll go to expand. Like, maybe it'll be all corporate owned. Maybe it'll be like completely franchised. Maybe it'll be a mix of both. I will say, like, since opening, there's a ton of these like independent operators who have like total e-com digital delivery charcuterie businesses. So there is we've gotten a ton of inquiries already about franchising. So I think that is an opportunity for us. But one that's like more down the line, for like a growth strategy to explore. So yeah.
All right. You can put a curd in any city, you know, outside of now New York and Boston. Where would you put it next?
Oh, Morgan's, what did you say the other day?
I was visiting my friend in Philadelphia and they have a ton of really cool street art, which is something that we like draw a lot of inspiration from. So I was like, oh, that could be like a cool pairing for us, but I don't want to make any assumptions or promises right now.
Maybe like San Juan.
Okay.
Yeah, where's the place we can get a good vacation to?
I was gonna say, are you gonna go back to Madrid or something? Like, I feel like you got to go back to the roots.
I know. I was just so, I like, even like talking about, because some of my friends who also live in the North End are like, you should put one in the North End, and I'm like so hesitant. Like, I would never want to disrupt the Italian like the old Italian men who, like, they know charcuterie. Like, I would never want to even, like, intercept that. So same with, like, Madrid. They just have a different way of life there. They love their jamon in a different way.
It's true. It's true. So, Morgan, you did mention the street art. So I want to touch on this a little bit because I think it's such a cool element of your brand that, like, so many other new businesses just don't have. So tell me a little bit about, like, the artist program and how you've really built that out and how that was kind of part of the core brand since the very beginning.
Yeah. So I think we think of, like, charcuterie, art, and conversation as all being, like, three pillars that support each other, in the sense that they all facilitate conversation, or, you know, bringing people together. And so the art is a pillar that we use in our store. We have an artist that comes in for a rotation every 3 months, and they have this, you know, blank wall in our store that they can kind of do whatever they want to it. So, like, our first artist had a huge, like, dragon mural. I remember walking into the store the first time, like, having just kind of met Jilly and knowing this was, like, a charcuterie thing. So I'm, like, you know, conceptualizing, like, I don't know, the kitschy, like, you know, moms on Instagram making charcuterie, and you walk in the store and there's a giant, like, rainbow breathing dragon on the walls. And I kind of knew, like, at that moment, like, this was totally different than, you know, anything I had seen before. But we've had different artists who have come in and, you know, done their own collections, and they get to do a box too that they get royalties from.
And how do you select these artists? What is sort of the process like to bring these people in and partner with them? And do you have any grand visions for, like, where you want to take the artist program going forward?
So I think, I mean, a lot of the artists have kind of come to us. I know our first artist, Henry, was a friend of Jilly's from BC. And then our second artist, Daisy, just, like, came in our store and was like, hey, can I do this? Like, can I be your next artist? And then I think, did you stalk Elizabeth, right,
Jilly? Yeah, I stalked the third artist. I was like, wow, her Instagram is so dope. And it just, like, yeah. Then I, like, tracked her down creepily. And now she was our third artist.
Well, if you need any more artists, I do have a few, I think, guests of this show who would make for some fantastic artist features in the store.
Totally. Yeah. Pass them forward. Yeah.
We'll get you a couple of those. But I just love, I mean, it's such a cool element, and I'm sure it adds just a reason for people to come back in the store. Like, you know, you say you go in once and you're like, oh, it's great. But, you know, now you have a reason every couple of months to come back in, try out the new box, see the new art installation. Like, it's just a whole, I think it's a really brilliant idea. As you continue to grow, you know, you're looking at New York, you're looking at sort of trying to expand what this concept looks like. Jilly, for you in particular, and I guess now both for both of you, how do you think about hiring and, like, who the people are that are part of your business? Because obviously, you know, there's people behind the counter, there's the cashiers, there's the artists that you partner with, there's all these people that, like, adjacently touch your business. How do you think about, like, bringing in new people to, you know, maintain your vision?
Yeah. So I think, like, even past the specifics of the org and how we're thinking about the org structure, like, Morgan and I both know that the next logical hire is somebody with the experience, or not only experience, but, like, the expertise in this world, like, in the food and bev world as, like, an operator. So the way we're thinking about it is, like, the next logical hire is probably, like, a head of ops, like, somebody to come in who has, like, the experience, like, the senior level experience of, you know, developing and implementing SOPs, like, creating greater automation, like, who probably has, like, the tech edge that Morgan and I don't have to, like, create greater efficiencies in, like, store flow and checkout process and, like, stuff like that. And then also the lowest hanging fruit for us too is, like our cost of goods. So, like, somebody, like, a head of ops would help to negotiate pricing with suppliers and, like, packaging and, like, stuff like that. So that person, like, we're actually in, like, active recruiting to try to get. And then how we're thinking about it after that is like probably the next logical hire is like an events and catering person. Like we're trying to make catering like a core category for 2022 and beyond. So somebody to like spearhead that whole division. And then in my mind, the next person would probably be like a head of product. So somebody to like come in and actually like elevate our product and our offerings. So that's how I'm thinking about it. I think even past like the title, like I said, just getting somebody who can really be like the third leg of this stool for Morgan and I, who has the experience that we don't have. It's like, we've launched the company, we've like built like the general infrastructure, but like somebody to really like come in and help us scale it is now a must.
And is there like a personality type? Is there just a people in general? You know, you have people like working behind the counter, like how, like, you know, you two are just fresh out of college. You probably have never, you know, only been hired by a couple of jobs in high school and college. How do you now think about like, okay, you're going to come and work for me, like hiring people out? And what does that even look like for you guys?
I feel like it's huge imposter syndrome most of the time. Yeah. Even, you know, when we're just hiring people that are working in the store, I'm like, oh, I don't know, like, tell me about yourself. And
yeah,
it's hard to know. And I feel like, but I don't know, talking to other people, like my parents who have hired people, they kind of say, you never quite know anyway. So I guess that's a little comforting. But I think we just, you know, generally look for people who we can get along with and, you know, who are going to provide good customer service at the end of the day.
Yeah. And like, I think the other thing too, is like, because Morgan and I are like young and like we're females, it's like, you want somebody who just like believe, who's like a grinder, who like is passionate about like creating and like starting something, like someone who like isn't in it for the money. Cause like, this is a startup. It's like, you need to be in it cause you believe in the idea and like the team. So that's part of the culture of hiring too.
Okay. Yeah. I'm always curious from people who are now building out teams. Like it's hiring is maybe the hardest thing to do in running a business. And it is not an easy task, I imagine. All right. I just have a few, you know, kind of random last questions to close us out here. First one, Hinge as a marketing strategy. I don't know where I saw this, but is that, you know, how has that gone for you guys?
Yeah. So I put that on my Hinge profile. Cause I was bored and getting disillusioned with the app as it's supposed to be used. And I figured I might as well, I don't know, promote the business on it and maybe people will take their dates to Cured. So I just put that as my like job. I think it says like charcuterie startup as my job title. And then, you know, people like ask about that and I just like drop the link to our website and then like disappear.
it's brilliant. And I will say you're not the first guest on the show to have used a dating profile for their business. Another one of our female founder friends just only gives out dates in exchange for their protein bars. So it does work.
It does. It's a great tactic. You got to do what you got to do.
Yeah.
Use it to your advantage. Come on girls. We all know that.
Exactly. I love it. You talk about being like the sweet green or the Chipotle of the business world, or of, you know, of charcuterie, I guess. Is there, as you continue to grow, is there like a, we've made it when we hit this, like, is there something that you sort of look towards as like that grand thing that you would mark as like, okay, yep, we've hit this. We've arrived.
Oh, that's
it's a big question. I don't know.
That's an important question to consider, actually.
It's probably always changing. I don't know. Like, I remember when we first like sold out a product, we were like, this is the craziest thing ever and biggest thing that could happen. And now I think just being able to open in like New York is like a huge milestone. So I don't know.
I think like once people start associating like Cured, like to be synonymous with charcuterie, I guess you could say, like once Cured is synonymous with charcuterie, like when you think charcuterie, when you think of Cured, like interchangeably, I think that's when we know we have made it or whatever, but I don't know what that looks like. So like, Yeah, I'm not sure how that's measurable, but I would say that.
But that's a pretty good, I think that's a pretty good articulation of it. Like, you think sweet green, you think salads and bowls, you think Chipotle, right. You think of like Mexican rice burritos, like that type of thing. Like, there's an immediate, this food goes with this brand. And cool. I could see that. It's a very, I think, pretty good articulation there. Here's a good one for you, I think. Did you invent the meat cone, the meat bouquet? Is that a cured, can we trademark that?
Oh my gosh. So like, I first had like the inception of the meat cone came from Madrid, where I would like go home from school every day and go to the Mercado de San Miguel, and they would have these little tiny paper cones of like little tiny bites of salami in it. I was like, what the hell? Like, this is something I've never, this is crazy. Like, this is one of the, you know, like, I was a charcuterie fanatic. Like, I was the 8-year-old that got the full long Italian sub from like Subway. Like, I just loved meat and cheese. So I was like, this is amazing. Like, a little snack, it's portable, you can walk. So that's where I first saw it. And then like when COVID hit and there were all these like independent people like starting their own online charcuterie companies, like that's really where it became big. So we did not invent it. The Spaniards invented it. And then all of these other independent operators, charcuterie people, like confirmed it, that it's a thing.
Okay. All right. That's, I thought it was going to be trademarked to cure the meat cone forever was you guys.
Well, we're looking.
People can think that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you have any ideas on something we can trademark, like, let us know.
Okay. Well, I mean, maybe it's just calling it the meat cone. Maybe nobody calls it the meat cone yet, and you guys can just take that name and make it yours.
I like that.
Yeah.
This maybe plays into that a little bit. If you get one, you know, you guys offer like a million things. You can get, there's so many custom options within your boards. You both get one meat and one cheese for the rest of your life. You can't eat anything else. What's going in your little meat cone?
Well, I would say the truffle salami for me and the triple play Parmesan. And I'm not a Parmesan person until I tasted the triple play Parmesan. So that's me.
That's hard. I would have said the triple play Parmesan also a few months ago, but I've eaten so much of it that I don't know if it makes it into my lifetime cone. It might be Manchego. I think it's a little easier. It's more, yeah, like you marry Manchego, I think. It's got a long-term future.
It's more of a day-to-day cheese. I gotcha.
Yeah, yeah. And then meat, I really don't eat a lot of meat, but I do obviously sample our goods. And probably the fennel salami is my favorite.
Okay. All right. I was going to go prosciutto and Manchego. So you, I think you got me one for two there. like, what, do you guys have a in-store policy of employee sampling?
Yeah,
I would just be constantly picking at what's in front of me.
Yeah, we have like an employee discount, but like sampling, yeah, we're like constantly nibbling. At least like I am. You'd think I'd be like sick of it at this point, but I'm not.
I think, yeah, whenever we get new products in too, we like unveil if anyone who's in the store, like, oh, you have to try this, and even things that are terrible you have to try sometimes.
What does that look like for you? Because I know another big part of your business is, you know, you like the locally sourced things, you're kind of constantly finding new food vendors. How are you bringing in new products or new vendors, and how do you think about like that portfolio that you have available?
Yeah, I think some of it is honestly just Googling and finding outreach. Like we're doing something, we're bringing in like Grillo's Pickles. I don't know if you're familiar, they're Boston based, but I was just like emailing someone from the pickle company and like trying to, you know, figure out how to get them sourced. And other times I think it's just, you know, finding local farms that have what we want to offer. A lot of internet searching, honestly, and internet rabbit holes about different products.
And you guys also do like obviously the core business is meats and cheeses and accessories like that, but you do sandwiches as well. Like, is there a hope or want to go sort of beyond or adjacent to what's in the charcuterie world?
I feel like we like, so we were doing sandwiches in our Beacon Hill store for the summer and like the fall. And then we actually stopped doing them because, I mean, we do them in timeout still, but we stopped doing them in Beacon Hill because we felt like it was kind of actually getting off topic of like who we are as like a brand. Like, and we want to be super, super like lean and focused. So we stopped doing that, but I do think there is room for like product innovation in the realm of charcuterie in like a different way. So like, if we were to get like an air fryer, like prosciutto chips are like a thing, like little like things like that, I think we could offer and get creative with.
Okay. This is, I'll give you my free idea here. There might be some more coming as my brain starts to go crazy. I've always thought like the best thing in the entire world is the burnt cheese that gets stuck on like a pan when you're cooking something. Like, why is nobody ever, I mean, they're basically just Cheez-Its, but burnt cheese crisps or something. That's your new offering.
That's a really good idea, actually. That's like in the world of cereal, when you finish the bowl of cereal and you have the milk left and it's all like sugary and stuff, like that's like bottling up that and selling it is like, that's how I think of the burnt cheese on the pan. So that's a great idea. Thanks.
It's something. And I did just see, I think somebody in Boston is now selling, it's like a coffee shop in Boston is selling like Cinnamon Toast Crunch milk. They're selling like Fruity Pebbles milk as like a mix in for your coffee. So you're onto something there too.
Wow. That's, oh my gosh, diabetes. Okay.
All right. I've got two last questions for you both. So you're my first biggest unexpected challenge or mistake in running this business so far.
Oh, that's a good one too. I would say there was this one day where, actually I feel like this isn't really even an unexpected challenge because, okay, I'll just say it. There's this one day where how we started Cured is like, we, like I said, we've never worked in food really, except for being like waitresses and like cashiers. And so we didn't even know that there was like this like conception of prep cooks. And that's like a thing in the restaurant industry. And so in the summer of 2021, when we launched, we would come in, service would start at 11. All the employees would get in at 10:30, and like we would spend 30 minutes prepping for the day. And clearly like that was just not like what you're supposed to do in the food industry, because, you know, the summer months, like I said, that was our peak time. And so we would run out of prepped product within like 30 minutes of like service starting. So there was this one day where this was directly after that first TikTok was posted, and the store was just like buzzing and buzzing with people. And we just did our natural thing, like come in at 10:30, prep a little, cut some cheese, like fill the pans and go. And by like 2 p.m. we were just out of everything, and customers would be coming up and the pans would just be completely empty. There was like maybe like a couple cashews in like a couple pans or whatever. And so we just could not catch up, and I'd be slicing, turning around, putting in the customer's box. Another girl would be like cutting cheese, like whatever cheese the customer wanted, quickly putting it in. We'd be trying to get it down the line. And then, we ended up just completely running out of everything. It was a horrible customer experience, just like very, just really bad. So we had to like close and early. And yeah, I think like it was cool because it's like awesome, there's a ton of demand for this, but like we just really didn't know how the restaurant industry worked. And so we learned like the need of prep cooks and like preparation. Yeah.
All right. I like that one. Morgan, any for you?
I think this is more like a behind the scenes thing, but when we were doing our pop-up at Soa Market, we were like, oh, we'll just like, you know, get a few things to like set up our booth, I guess. And it was just a crazy day. We had to run to like get a U-Haul to like get the stuff that we were carrying, because our little like Jeep couldn't fit like mini fridges and counters. So we're like doing that, and the two of us are like carting fridges and counters like up to the second level of this warehouse to set up for SOA. And just like, we didn't know we signed up to be like movers as a part of this job. And just, I think, not anticipating all the kind of like physical labor that can go into some of these setups.
There's a lot more that goes into it than just like, you know, pushing meat and cheese. All right. So my last question for you both, I end every show with the sign off of stay weird. So I have to ask, what makes you weird?
That's a really good question. I'm super, super, super weird. I just can't even like pinpoint a specific reason.
Should we do it for each other?
I like that. I like that.
Okay. I think mine for you, Jilly, is you don't really watch any reality TV except for 1,000-Pound Sisters, which you like obsessively watch.
Oh my God, that's a good one. How could I forget? That's really, really good.
You need to get that 1,000-Pound Sponsors to, or the 1,000-Pound Sisters to sponsor Curry Cure.
Dude, I 100% like Tammy. She's like one of the 1,000-Pounders. She would eat so much charcuterie. She'd be like our number one customer. Morgan, yours is like, you have this weird obsession with like soup and lentils. Like every time I ask Morgan, like, what are you cooking for dinner? You just always make like lentils. I don't know what it is, but
I was going to make them for dinner tonight.
Yeah,
no, exactly. You can't.
I know. But I also, think it's just to balance out, I think all the meat and cheese, I have to get a vegetable or legume in there.
That is a wrap on this week's episode of Destination Different. Huge thank you to the Cured co-founders. I've been into their store before. This interview has been a long time coming. Last summer, I think I went in, I don't know, 2-3 times, got myself a little meat cone, got myself a plate, a box, and I love their concept. The inside of their store is unreal with the art and the partnerships that they're doing there. The design just feels so different than what you'd normally expect in a food retail store. So I love that they're expanding. I love what they're doing. And who doesn't love a little meat box, a little meat cone? And there's nothing better than that. There's just nothing better than what they're doing. So huge thank you to them. We'll get everything linked up in the description, where to follow them, where to go and get a little meat and cheese box. And I'm so excited about what they're building. They are expanding. I can truly see this thing going national. Franchise model, independent stores. I don't know what it looks like. I don't know if they quite know what it looks like yet, but it is exciting because there really is a market for this. It just doesn't exist out there. So stay tuned for what Cured's got coming, but huge thank you to the ladies for speaking with me on this week's Destination Different. That's all we got. We are rolling. We're into March. We are into our 30s. Hard to believe it, but it's here and might as well embrace it. So that's it. That's all I got. We will be back again next Thursday with another episode of Destination Different. Why am I talking like this? In little choppy sentences. But anyways, until then, let's stay weird.
We fell in love for just a couple hours. I can't tell the difference between what's fake and what's been missing. Often I'm misunderstood, so I'm looking for a better me. This is your love song, baby. you know the words. This is your love song. Take time, cause with you I feel it.